Welcome back to another episode of Unboxed. Today, we're with Seth Yolorda, organizational psychologist for Kaiser Permanente and host of the Vision Clarity podcast. So stick with us as we work to unlock the full power and potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unboxed Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unboxed Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. We're excited for today's show. We have a very dynamic and exciting guest with us, Seth Yolorda. And he's going to be talking to us about his experiences in leadership as a coach, as an organizational psychologist, and just all of the wealth of experience that he has in helping leaders become the best that they can be. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Robert Davis, who is going to start our interview with Seth.
Hey, man, listen, I I'm so glad to have Seth here. Seth and I have been friends for years now. Our paths have crossed on multiple occasions. We are alum of the same alma mater, and I'm just so excited. I think maybe you, Raphael, should start this off because I understand that when you were a young adult, he was something like a preteen or a teenager. And he had an opportunity to interact. I made sure to say that because I did not want folks to think that
I was just a young chap. I was a young chap.
Yeah, he was a young chap, man. I didn't want people to think he was old and decrepit as we are. but yeah, so you and Seth knew each other back in Kansas City. Am I correct about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we did. And before I go into a little bit of that history, let me remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe. Sometimes I get excited about our show and I forget to plug the business, which usually results in some kind of pay deduction from Robert Davis whenever I do that. See, if I haven't learned by now, I probably never will. But at any rate, yeah, Seth Yolorda, we do go kind of way back. I met Seth when he was a young man. I'm assuming you were probably a
high school junior. Yeah.
In high school. Yeah. So
sophomore, junior,
we attended the same church and I was doing some guest speaking, I think, a few times at the church, and unbeknownst to me, Seth was somehow, some reason, he was probably somehow the only one awake during the sermon, but somehow I rubbed off on him a little bit and did some kind of motivated him in some way.
I just want to go on record and say that you are significantly downplaying the events that transpired some 20 plus, 30 plus years ago. You are a key influencer in the path that I decided to go on as a communicator. And so I'm forever grateful for just you being used in that moment and for your willingness and courage to, even in that short season when our church was in transition, step in. But I don't know if you remember, you were also a camp counselor. What was it? Thunderbird? Was it Camp Thunderbird?
Was that? I don't remember. But that was a summer camp, right?
It was a summer camp. Yeah.
Oh yeah. We went all kind of sideways with that, man. I was not. I should not have been in charge of young children of any age. I think we went. I can remember we went sideways. There were things that.
Okay. So I definitely remember those days. And you had us in line. I think you called us the Navy SEALs. And
yeah, we had like water gun fights and all kind of crazy stuff. Yeah, I took it a little far. We
3 years on the statute of limitations for a lawsuit. You know,
I remember that went pretty bad. I mean, I think some people's rooms got so soaked that they couldn't even use them. I mean, we were almost terrorists. I called us Navy SEALs. I should have called us Al Qaeda or something at the time. It was pretty bad. But we had a good time. Played a lot of basketball, a lot of stuff. Yeah, I do remember that. And I didn't know you were, I mean, you must have been really young.
Yeah, I mean, I was still, it was high school. So I was probably freshman, sophomore. High school.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool. It was good times, man. All right, man. Those were good times. Yeah. That made you bring back some memories.
Leaders of a feather flock together. And so I want to kind of just kick it off. Seth, you're from Kansas City. I'm interested just kind of in your family background, your siblings, your parents. Tell me a little bit about home life.
Yeah. Yeah. So from Kansas City, three sisters. One of them is their birthday today. She just turned 30, my little sister.
Congratulations.
Happy birthday.
So she's doing big things. I am the third in the order of four. So I have two older, one younger. Parents, mom and dad, grew up in a very traditional home, traditional family. My dad worked in healthcare. My mom was kind of like a stay-at-home kind of mom. So she really kind of filled in the gap and made sure that we made it to all of our basketball practices and whatever we were getting involved in. And so definitely had a strong foundation. My dad was a very strong leader, both in the home, in the community. And so he really modeled that for me through much of my life, which I'm really appreciative of. And so then from there, I just kind of launched into pastoral ministry. I served as a pastor for close to 15 years, over 15 years. And, just felt like that was the season of life that God was calling me into to lead the community and lead congregations. And so that's just a little background of as far as where I've been and kind of where I am now.
Man, awesome. So I'm curious, as we talk about your family background and stuff, how do you think that you mentioned your father being a leader, your mother being a stay-at-home mother, and your siblings, et cetera. As you look at just your family dynamics, how do you think that influenced or impacted your leadership?
Well, I think all of us are influenced by our environment, right? Yeah. So we all come from, we are our products, our environment. When I think about my family, I mean, it's hard for me to point to say, hey, because my dad did this, I'm doing that. Or because my mom did this, I'm doing that. I think it was just, they really created an environment and encouraged me to apply myself, to speak up. They helped me to develop my voice. You know, my dad was deep into Taekwondo. He had his own Taekwondo studio. And so I was kind of going through that when I was kind of those elementary, kind of first grade to eighth grade. I was in Taekwondo with him and at his classes. I'll go there and hang out. He was a businessman. He was an entrepreneur, or is still. And so I could just, that was modeled for me. Someone who really took life by the horns. And if he had a dream, if he had a vision, he went after it. And so I think all of that just kind of was kind of soaked into my psyche. I can't recall a time where he gave me some, pep talk that really sent me on my way. It wasn't like one of those types of events. It was just hanging around an individual who was a strong leader in the family, a strong leader in the community at his job. He was an executive. So he was a high performing leader and he was an entrepreneur. And I think just observing that through osmosis, I kind of caught some of it. I would hope to think so.
Wow. I'm just listening. And it's so encouraging. Before we started this broadcast, we were just kind of talking about backgrounds and me coming from DC, a single parent home. I'm always amazed. There's something about young men, especially young Black men that are raised in a home with a strong father, that you can just kind of sense it when they open their mouth, when they walk, etc. I'm hearing that from you. I'm hearing that from you. And it's amazing because, your mother was at home with you. So I know that from a time perspective, you probably spent more hours in the day with your mother, but yet and still your father had such a profound impact on you.
For sure.
You're right. You said that you are number three of four.
Number three. Yep.
Yeah, number three of four. I'm always interested in sibling positions as it relates to how that influences how we move in relationships, how we move in life. What are the genders of your other siblings? I know you shared it
again with me. All girls are three sisters.
Okay.
We're all like 2 years apart, but then my youngest sister is 11 years younger than me. So there was a pretty big gap there. And so my two older sisters, we grew up pretty close. I mean, there was a lot of sibling rivalry between me and my oldest one. So we were always kind of going back and forth and fighting all the time. But my oldest sister really kind of served as almost like the second mother of us. Yes. Right. And so she would kind of like keep us together. And all of us have positive relationships with her. Me and my older sister would fight all the time. And then me and my younger sister, I mean, when she came around, I was 11, 12 years old. And so definitely was that classic big brother, you know, old enough to kind of take care of her and watch over her, and wasn't necessarily like that sibling rivalry dynamic that you would get with, you know, siblings who are closer in age.
Do you think that any of your sibling position, your relationship with your siblings, that it influenced either your leadership or assisted you managing organizations and how you manage your leadership?
I mean, that's honestly a good question. And I have to be honest, I have not given it a ton of thought nor study. I'd really have to really sit and think on that. I would imagine that there would be some influence. I think all of us, as we are kind of matriculating through life and we're growing older, we're trying to find our way. And I think depending on where we fall in the birth order, I think depending on the personality and the dynamics of our siblings, like all of that influences who we become, right? Yeah. Now, to the extent of which I can accurately, you know, articulate how my birth order has influenced the leader I am today, I would really have to sit with that and think on it. But I'm sure, you know, it has on some level, without a doubt.
I can speak for your sisters on this, Seth.
Yeah.
Being the dad of two daughters, the fact that you project yourself as someone who really, really has his act together, I can tell you directly that's because you've got two big sisters. Mm-hmm. And they have probably influenced you in a way to where you have so much together. I'm sure I know it's your dad, I know it's your mom, but I could imagine growing up with two older sisters, they have a way of making sure that there's not a lot of, you know, there's some guardrails up, and they keep you in line.
I can definitely see that. I was obviously living in their shadow on some level. They were very popular in school. So when I came along 2 years later, it was like, oh, you're Mari's brother, you're Megan's brother. And so that kind of gave me some opportunity and some wiggle room. The other thing I would say is that my father was very intentional about making sure that while I was the only boy in the family, I was not treated with any type of special favoritism. So if they had curfew at 11 p.m., I had curfew at 11 p.m., right? I wasn't able to stay out till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning just because I was a boy, right? He was very clear. And I, you know, just thinking back on it now, I would say that on some level, I'm sure that has impacted my leadership in that I really strive for equality and justice and making sure that people are treated fairly no matter who you are or what you have or don't have. I'm sure, and I've heard him say it a billion times, like, no, you're just because you're my son doesn't mean I'm gonna treat you differently than your sisters, right? This was their rules, these are same your rules, right? He said it 100 times. And so I'm sure that that now has shaped even how I lead teams, how I coach people, and just kind of my orientation to, you know, when there is a power gap or when there is disparity or, you know, organizational injustice taking place, why I might feel so passionate about making sure that equality and justice is experienced across the board for everyone.
Well, I we're going to move on because Raphael has a lot of questions he wants to ask you, and I do as well, just about what you do as a organizational psychologist, a little more about your business, your consulting, as well as what you do at Kaiser. But I would love to dig in one day a little bit more about how a leader, you talked about your father's a leader, talked about your family dynamics. How does a leader ensure equity while at the same time recognizing that there is a difference between individuals? There are differences in the way that little boys act and the way little girls act. And I'm sure your father identified and recognized that. I would love to explore that more. We're not going to do it at this one, but that's something I'd love to dig into. But I'm going to let Raphael, he has some great questions about what you do and how you're changing the world.
Yeah, Seth, share with us a little bit about, and I guess this is part of your journey. I think for the better part of several years, 6, 7 plus years, you have been coaching and developing leaders with vision clarity, and now you have moved into a role with Kaiser Permanente. So I'll let you kind of start with you know, kind of the and origins pastoring. Of Islam. Okay, and pastoring, but
yeah,
you can talk a little bit about that, and then sure. just kind of how you transitioned into Vision Clarity, what the mission vision is for the organization you lead there, and then how that's moved into your role at Kaiser.
Definitely, yeah. So, as I mentioned, you know, I was pastoring for the betterment of 15 years, and what's interesting about my journey is that the day I started pastoring, the summer I started. Right before I started pastoring full time and had my own churches, I started off with three churches in Mississippi. The summer before that happened, I was at a lunch with some church members on a Saturday afternoon, and we were talking, and there was actually a retired minister there who had pastored a number of churches throughout his career, and he was kind of sharing his journey. And as he was talking, I was really admiring his diligence, persistence, and how he was able to just be a legacy leader and have such a great impact. But something kind of stirred in my spirit during that conversation. And I almost felt like God was telling me in that moment that, Seth, you will be a pastor for now, but you won't be a pastor forever. And I didn't fully understand it at then, like, wow, I'm not quite sure I understand what that means. But just from that point forward, I always sensed that during this season, God has called me into the senior pastor role of a local congregation, but where I am right now is just for a season. And while I wasn't quite sure what the next season held, I did know that God wanted me to start my professional life, my professional career, serving the community as a senior pastor. And so I did that for the betterment of 15 years. And then around year 10 or 11, I started to just really kind of get frustrated with the church. I started getting frustrated with the lack of mission and clarity and organization. I felt like, man, there's so much bureaucracy. We're so traditional, so backwards. There has to be a better way. And so I committed to studying it. So I went and I got my MBA. I wanted to really understand, how do you run a church and how do you run it effectively? And so I got my MBA, and then I said, you know what? I know business, and I know how to do spreadsheets and org charts. But I began to realize that that's not what changes organizations. It's not spreadsheets and org charts. What changes organizations is culture. And I said, I really need to know culture. And so I decided to go back to school and to get my PhD in organizational psychology, organizational behavior. And so that's where I started working on this process. And in the process of getting my PhD, I started working with my friends who had churches and coming in. They would bring me in to do workshops and seminars. And I just started to realize that there's space in the world for this type of work, for someone like myself who is passionate about the community, who's passionate about nonprofits, who wants to see, you know, our kind of grassroots organizations make a difference in the world. Wow. There's space for me to come in and help those organizations really operate on a high level. And so around 2013, 14, 15, probably around 2015, I started Vision Clarity. Which is just a LLC business consultancy, which provides leadership development and strategic planning services. And I've been blessed with the opportunity to work with a ton of churches, a number of nonprofits, healthcare clinics, schools, universities, academies, really helping them develop leaders, whether it's one-on-one coaching with me and the senior leader, or whether it's taking the leaders aside and doing a strategic planning retreat for them, helping them kind of think about the future, crafting vision, crafting mission, and then trying to redefine their structure, working with them on some org design and change management processes. And so I've been doing that for the betterment of the last 7 or 8 years. And then just within the last 24 months, I had an opportunity to work as an internal consultant with Kaiser Permanente and do the same thing. And so I was an external consultant for a number of years. And I said, man, some of the challenges of being an external consultant is that you're not always able to see a project through completion, because you come in, you give best practices, you kind of help them out, and then you leave. And a lot of times they go back to doing business as usual. And so there's a part of me that was wondering, well, what would happen if I actually was an internal consultant? I was hired by the organization and I journeyed with them through the life of the project. And so I have that opportunity now at Kaiser Permanente, and I work with their senior leadership team of the Riverside Medical Center. And I do culture transformations and leadership coaching and strategic planning and org design work, change management work, team building, team partnership collaborations. And it's just a beautiful thing. I really love my job.
That's awesome, Seth. That's awesome. Let me get some clarity around a couple of things here. You mentioned that one of the things that kind of kicked this off was your frustration in some of the bureaucracy and the way that the church was run. Were you seeing? And I'm not asking this question to highlight the problems of the church. I just want to get at, was this what you were seeing in your local situation? Because a lot of people probably don't know. I mean, we know because we were a part of the same kind of institutional organization with the churches that we were a part of. But a lot of people probably don't understand that structure, that, you know, you're part of a local church that you actual pastor, and that comes with its own issues of bureaucracy, as you mentioned out. But then there's the top layer, the organizational, the management structure. Was your frustration with just the local part you were with, or with the, you know, kind of the senior level management area, or was it a combination of both? Do you see those same issues in the organizations that you've consulted with, you know, as you've gone through your journey? Are those unique to the church, or have you seen that, oh, I see these same kind of issues everywhere I go? Is that universal?
Yes, 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 and yes, all the above.
Right? Okay.
I mean, it was frustration with the local church, right? But the local church doesn't operate in a vacuum. They are heavily influenced by, you know, the national, the regional, national, global church, right? Mm-hmm. And the culture just kind of trickles down. The structure is trickling down. And so there's a lot of frustration there. But, you know, I don't want to make it seem like it's just the church, because it's not. You know, right. I'll never forget, it was, you know, 2 days before Thanksgiving, and I was standing outside of one of the most popular bakeries here in Riverside County in Southern California, and the line was around the building, and people were waiting for 3-4 hours to pick up their pies. And I'm standing in line, and I'm saying to myself, this makes absolutely no sense. Where is your process improvement? Like, where is your, like, there's no reason why, it was, you know, this is, you know, 2019, we should be waiting for 2 hours outside lines around the building to pick up some pies that we ordered, you know, 3 weeks ago, right? Even in that, it's like, whenever I step into an organization that I feel like has so much potential, but that is underperforming on so many levels, my blood just boils. And I just feel like, I feel like a holy, you know, righteousness, you know, indignation to try to come in and to help this organization get they ish together, because they have so much more to offer the world than what they're currently offering. But because of, you know, poor processes, poor leadership, you know, lack of execution, they are unable to truly deliver on the gold mine that they're holding and possessing with inside of them. So yes, definitely applies to church, but applies to small businesses and schools and universities and nonprofits and all the above. And, you know, quiet as it kept, it also applies to healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. So much bureaucracy, so much rules and regulations and compliance issues that sometimes we are just handcuffing ourselves, and we just can't get out of our own way to try to actually do the great work that we want to do, which is serve the members in our community and provide for them high quality healthcare interventions and solutions to their health challenges.
Man, there is a lot there. I mean, listening to you talk, yeah. I'm sure the same thing is happening to you, Robert. The gears are turning, and this conversation I can already see could go for hours on end. But I want to kind of move it along. There's a lot there that I want to tease out, but I want to, and we probably will get back to some of that. But I want to ask you now, kind of moving into what has influenced you. You mentioned kind of a pivotal point early in your pastoral career, which I find absolutely fascinating. I can't think of many people that I know, and even in my personal experience, where I would have been a relatively new pastor, which is kind of like being on the mountaintop, right? It's what you go to school for. Yeah. It's what you look forward to have this sense that I'm not going to be doing this forever. Mm-hmm. So that, I find that incredibly fascinating. But you mentioned the retired minister that kind of kind of sent you on that seemed to kind of open the door to that, to that possibility and to that, you know, to the feeling that, that God was leading you in this way. But who else along your journey? We've talked about your dad. We've talked about your sisters, your mom. Who else, as you were in pastoral leadership, let's pick it up from there.
Sure.
Who kind of helped you in this direction? Because even though you recognize, look, there's some organizational problems in time, you started to realize there are organizational problems. To even be able to identify that, because a lot of times we don't even know what the problem is. We know there's a problem, but we don't know what the problem is until we get educated on it. I'm assuming somewhere along the road, there was either a book or
definitely
a podcast or something of someone who said, oh, yes, this is the issue. There is an organizational leadership issue. There's a cultural issue. There's all of these things. Talk a little bit about that, the people who influenced you to kind of move into this particular direction.
Definitely. You know, there are some people who are blessed with foresight where they can see something that has never been done before and they can go do it, right? The majority of us do not have that ability. The majority of us can only do what we've seen someone else do before us,
right?
And I think I kind of fall into that camp where when I started in pastoral ministry, I think I was just on the tail end of that old school kind of ideology that said, if you leave pastoral ministry, then you are leaving the ministry and you're leaving the church. I mean, Robert, you know this, both of you all probably know this. For a long time, there was this ideology that permeated through kind of pastoral ranks, which said, you know, once a pastor, always a pastor. And if you leave, you would almost be branded as you left the church. I think I was on like the tail end of that.
You left the Lord's work as well. Yeah.
Yeah. You left the Lord's work. Exactly. Right. And so I think I was on the tail end of that, where that sentiment was still around, but it wasn't, it didn't have the grasp on people that I think it did on some of my predecessors. And so when I was kind of going through ministry, I was seeing individuals who at least they were bivocational, where they were maybe pastoring, but then they were also, you know, teaching classes. They also had their own consultancy. They were doing some other work. And I think one of the pivotal people that really kind of opened my eyes to the possibility of where I felt God was maybe leading me and giving me confidence to go forward was none other than T.D. Jakes, right?
Okay.
We know him, Bishop Jakes. And, you know, I've always been, I've always appreciated his ministry from afar, and watching him be an individual who has boldly said, you know what, I am not just a pastor. I am also a movie producer. I am also an author. I am also all of these other things. Yeah. It started to really give me a different paradigm and help me to understand that, you know what, no, I think on some level we can be called to something for a season, but it doesn't mean we have to be there forever. Right. And so I feel like on some level, he was one of those individuals who was extremely influential. And again, this is from afar, watching his ministry and watching how he carried himself and how he was not afraid, or at least he did not, you know, display any fear in kind of going into new endeavors and trying new things, even though, you know, he may not have the credentials of a movie producer. He's still going to make a movie. Right. You know, he's not from Hollywood, but he's still going to do his thing. And so I think he was definitely one of those pivotal people. But then there's other individuals, I think more recently, who have also done something similar over the last 10 years. I think about individuals like Carrie Newhoff, who was a pastor, and now he's kind of full-time consultant. You know, there's individuals who have just understood that the call of God is much bigger than just behind the pulpit. And so even though I am, you know, working for Kaiser Permanente and I serve a lot of non-Christian organizations in my own consulting, I still very much so see it as ministry, right? I still see it as an extension of my call, the divine call on my life, which is to help teams and employees and leaders lead on a high level so that they can have better work-life balance, so they can be more engaged in work, and that ultimately we can make a difference in the community.
As an organizational psychologist, let me get a free session here for myself and for our listeners. You know, there is a tactical. You spoke a lot about the tactical aspects of transitioning from one career path to another, but then there's also the emotional, the psychological component. And this is something that I've seen, with each leader that I've had the opportunity to coach, et cetera, who has thought about wanting to do something different. There is that fear. If you've been, working in nonprofits your whole life, if you've been working in, corporate world, it's easy to move as a CEO from one company to another company. But then there's this emotional thing to say, okay, I'm going to leave doing this all together and start, whatever it may be, a bakery. Sure. It's really challenging. How did you and how does one manage the emotional, psychological challenge of venturing out, especially if you're going to set out on your own, and losing a lot of that security, the security of financial security from sure. what you're already doing, the relationship security because you have this family that you're already a part of in, within your workplace. How did you manage and how does one manage that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, and this is what I'll say to anyone else who is kind of in that valley of decision, is you have to be led by your North Star.
Right? Okay.
What is the thing that you feel that God has divinely called you to do, right? And whatever that thing is, I feel firmly that you should pursue it with all of your heart, right? And even for those who may not necessarily be, believers in God, part of a faith community, I feel like there is still like a higher sense of calling, right? And calling isn't exclusive to spiritual life, right? There is a higher sense of I just feel like I was like, this is my moment. This is my purpose. This is why I'm here. I think we have to be married to that and not married to the organizations, not married to the vehicles. If we're choosing to go on a road, if we're choosing to go on a trip and we know our destination is, let's say South Africa, well, we're going to be committed to a vehicle as long as it gets us to the airport. And then once you get to the airport, we're going to be committed to an airplane until it gets us to the harbor. And then we're going to be committed to a boat until it gets us to the shore. Like, I think the organization that you work for is just the vehicle to get you from one season to the next. And I think we have to begin to see it as that it's almost like just using a Bible kind of motif, Bible scripture story. I think about the life of Joseph, how he found himself in various situations, all of which seemed disjointed and disconnected.
Yes.
And really were sources of pain for him on some level. But hindsight, he could see how all of those situations were kind of woven together to lead him to his final destination. And I think for us in our lives, we have to also have a clear sense of what is my purpose, what is my calling, where am I going, and how does me serving in this role at this time in this organization serve that greater purpose? And if it doesn't, I think now we need to begin to evaluate, to make a move, to begin to align ourselves with an organization or with a team that does serve that purpose. But if it does, then say, okay, this organization does serve my greater purpose. What can I learn? What can I gain? How can I grow while here, recognizing again, I may not be here forever. I'm here for now. And so I want to maximize this opportunity.
Well, you gave us aligning. I was just going to say he gave us an awesome opportunity to do another shameless plug on behalf of Unbox to Lead, which is one of the things that we're very interested in when we work with leaders in our leaders peer support community is helping leaders to identify their life goals and where they want to move in the big picture. You refer to it as, I like that, the North Star. Where is your ultimate life destination? And understanding that various jobs, other things are just vehicles to help get there. But I think, and you shared this so well, as leaders flush out their ultimate destination, it becomes a lot less emotionally challenging for them to make these small transitions in their life. That was just a thought that came out as you said that. Raphael, thanks for letting me jump in.
No worries. And you can learn more at www.unboxtolead.com. At any rate, Seth, you come from a place of your pastoral ministry, the beginning of your career. It informs a lot of your leadership philosophy. And what I'm hearing constantly, the word I constantly hear is serving. Mm-hmm. And you've used this in different ways. You've talked about how the organization acts as a way of serving to a greater you know, a greater end for you, but that as a leader as well, that you're serving, you got to think about how I'm actually serving, what my mission is. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about why that's important in the psyche of the leader? I tend to see leadership as service. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the way that I see it. Is it important for leaders to really get that concept that they are there to serve? Is that baked into what leadership is, as opposed to I'm just here to order, tell people what to do,
sure,
move them into place? What is the difference between that kind of leader and a leader who thinks about their position as a position of service?
Yeah, that's a great question. I definitely feel that your role as a leader, whether it's in your organization, whether it's in your family, whether it's in your church, whether it's in your kids' little league, soccer, whatever you're doing, your role as a leader is one of, you are a steward, right? You've been given this opportunity. And as a leader, one of your primary responsibilities in that role is to bring out the best in others. And you don't bring out the best in others by driving people with like an iron fist and being dictatorial and top down. You bring out the best in others by coming alongside of them, helping them see what they can't see, giving them the courage and the support to rise to another level, and encouraging them, cheerleading them on, challenging them, stretching them in order to achieve what they did not think they could do on their own. I feel like fundamentally that's who we are as leader. Now, I know that there is a servant leadership, you know, construct, and, you know, good, bad, or another. I think that's a very popular construct. You know, Jesus's life was largely modeled off of that servant leadership, or servant leadership is largely modeled off of Jesus's life. And so I think that's one construct when it comes to, from an academic perspective on leadership. But I'm not speaking about that construct. I'm just speaking about the role that I play in the lives of the people that I've been called to lead, right? In the lives of the people that I serve. Patrick Lencioni wrote a phenomenal book called The Motive. And in this book, he describes two types of leaders. One who is reward-based or reward-oriented, and the other who is responsibility-oriented. And what he describes in this book is that there's one type of leader who, once they get to the C-suite, once they get that corner office, they see the corner office as a reward for all of their hard work that led them to that point. And so because that's how they see themselves, as I deserve this moment, then it influences how they show up, what they engage in. You know, there may be a lack of willingness to go the extra mile. They're kind of avoiding conflict. They don't want to go to meetings. They don't want to stay late because they feel like their position is almost like their retirement. I've arrived. Versus a responsibility-oriented leader who they see that their position in the corner office, the C-suite, is there only and primarily to serve, that you have been elevated to this position because you are the greatest servant of all. And it's your role to come in and to truly serve your people and to, again, help elevate them and help them to see and experience heights and a vision for their lives and for the organization that they could not have seen without you.
Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com.